started, it's important to acknowledge that we are standing here on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, and Dakota peoples, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation. And now I'd like to introduce today's author, Chris Gay Pollockin, who gave me permission to pronounce his name Alambé. He was born just north of the U.S. border in Santa Monica. His first novel, which he also visited Winnipeg with, called Running on Fumes, we have a copy of that in fact, if you'd like to borrow from the library. His second novel, which he's here with today, The Weight of Snow, tells the story of a badly injured man, a nationwide power failure, a village buried in snow, and a desperate struggle for survival. In 2017, it won the Governor General's Award for French Language Fiction, as well as the Prix de Collégien and the Prix Francais. And Chris tells me it's been translated into almost 15 languages already. So please give a warm welcome to Chris Gay Pollockin.
Thanks for the presentations. Thanks to you all to be here. I'm glad to see you all. What I propose for today is just a little talk about, you know, around my book and writing and writer's problems, or, you know, just a little stuff. And, you know, of course, to read to you a few extracts of my book. As you know, it was told, you know, The Weight of Snow is my second novel, but Running on Fumes was the first one. And even if those two novels are strongly independent, as I, you know, like to say, there's some links between those two. I did not, when I was writing, you know, The Weight of Snow, resist to the temptation, you know, of, you know, making some links between the two novels. In fact, if still they are really independent and two different projects, it's basically the same story, you know, just keep on going. But if so, this is not book one and book two. It's not a series. It's not nothing like that. I insist, like to say, those are like two different novels. But still, the reason for that is just the context, you know, as that I found to plot my story as in Running in Fume, was this power outage that we were talking about just in the resume of the story. Because at the first time, you know, if I go back a little bit in times when I was writing my first novel, you know, writing a first novel is always, you know, a big thing. You know, it took me, you know, and I'm journalist, it took me 10 years, you know, to write, you know, just a 200 pages little novel. It was my first novel. And, you know, doing so, it was like four different versions, not just versions, but, you know, different story completely and everything. But until a certain point, you know, I had the story that I wanted to tell. And this is always the big question, you know, that I think all writers I oomph with is, you know, what do finally I have to say right now, or how so I feel that I have to say something, or I feel that I have to tell a story, you know, those questions are always there. But when you hold something, you know, this is already, you know, it's more than a beginning, this is something. But then sometimes it's just not enough. I mean by that once I kind of find the story that I wanted to tell, the story was really, in a way, intimate, really personal, but fictionalized enough, you know, to be literature, to be, it was just a story of, you know, a young, you know, worker, a young man, you know, around between 30 and 40, who wanted to see, you know, his father before, because he was sick and before he died, but he was living, you know, in one side of the big continent, unknown, but obviously, that we can obviously imagine. And, you know, the guy was just taking his car, he was a mechanic, take his car, drive, you know, by across the country to see his father. But that was not enough. This is the thing I'm saying, because it was just, you know, it was really intimate. And even my character was really into himself, like a little bit too much. It was just like inside landscape almost, even if it was driving through the country, you know. It was really like a kind of a personal mythology, and it was missing something to help the narrative, I'm going to say, to be embraced a little bit larger. And I arrived to that point that it has to be something from the outside who affect really, you know, the character and everything's happening. And then became the idea of the power outage. And this is a basic idea. I was working at the time for my master at the university, and I was working, you know, post-apocalyptic worlds and everything, fiction, you know, The Road, Grand Cartier, a lot of stuff, and a lot of French writers do on that universe. And I did not want it to put my story in a post-apocalyptic world where there's, you know, zombies and tsunamis and big, you know, storms wiping out cities and that was too much, you know. And we know that there's plenty of fiction, you know, of that kind, and we kind of all know them by heart because it's always the same trope, mostly the same time. But the power outage was kind of a halfway solution or midway solution, because it's just kind of the beginning of one possible end. Like, nobody dies, there's just no electricity anymore, so of course then no more gas and no more communication, and then we have to reorganize all the communities, all the society, and how this is happening, and then it's all, you know, this is all a big human laboratory. And then that was something interesting. So the power outage with what I needed at the first time in my first novel to be sure that my main character, you know, will look outside of himself, and then, you know, to enlarge, you know, a little bit my story, you know. So there's some tension between, you know, with other drivers and stuff like that, and, you know, social tension who make maybe the fiction a little bit more dense or a little bit more like complete. There's the main goal of the character, and then there is like all this like social issues that are surrounding that. Well, that was for the first novel, but soon as I started the second novel, I was kind of with the same thing, you know. Again, I found myself say, "Oh, am I again telling a story where nothing's happened?" Kind of, you know. And I said, "Yes," you know. In fact, I loved, you know, to tell story where nothing's happened, especially because, you know, everything can happen at every moment, you know. Of course, you know, literature is a trick always. But this power outage, finally, I found myself that I did not finish yet to explore it, to push the narrative possibility of it, to make happen things from it. So I wanted this time, for the second novel, just to tell a story of caregiving. That was the main, not obsession, but the main goal that I wanted. And I wanted to reverse the caregiving, you know, situation, because usually what caregiving is, generally, it's an old person, you know, sick or at the end of his life slowly, and a member of family, of a friend, younger, helps them and is the caregiver. That's generally what we hear, you know. But what if, you know, a young character, you know, in the force of age, is that an expression in English? In the force of age? In the, you know, like mid-age, really, there has, for example, two broken legs, and he's being taken care of by an old and healthy and energetic man, old man. So the old man is the caregiver to this young, broken man. So that was my story. But how to make this story all together, and how to make it interesting and deep enough and tense enough to be enjoyable, to be literature, to be something more than just, you know, a basic story. How to make it depth, you know, some depth in it. So the power outage was again, you know, a solution to force this encounter between my two characters. You know, the young one and the old one are stuck in their little house, you know, in a power outage, and as the title says, during a winter. So the winter and the electricity shutdown, you know, helps me to take hostage my two main characters, and then observe what happened, you know, between them and what happened of their relation, you know, if at the beginning, of course, as the caregiving situation was pointing. There's the old man, really in shape, really there, you know, really energetic, helping this, like, you know, this broken young man, but, you know, was in a bed and not doing much. And then he was doing everything, you know, food, caregiving, cleaning, you know, organizing all the life in this, you know, no electricity, new world, you know, and in the countryside, et cetera, et cetera. But then, soon, as the character, the young one, is, you know, doing better and can walk a little and then speak and then take back his place, the relation shifts slowly. You know, it's every relation, you know, it's like a seek of power in a way, you know, in a relation. And then, you know, when something changes in a relation, then there is some resistances as well. So it's all, you know, it's all between that and again, you know, as a pretext, as an excuse, the power outage and this kind of the same story between my two books, it just, you know, to make some details, you know, that will not be clear without it, so strong without it. But saying that, you know, as when we're writing about something, I'll say like something really, really basic here. But you know, I cannot, you know, pass this on silence because it's a part, I must say, of every, you know, of every project. You know, everyone who writes a book, you know, work with doubts. Doubts is the motor. Doubt is the monster. Doubt is always there. You know, so we're always saying that, okay, am I doing, you know, am I telling the right story with the right ways? That does it make sense into together? Does it make sense to the people and get outside? You know, this we're always there. And you know, because I'm working on my third novel, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, carrying all those questions, and I'm crawling with the under the weight of it. But still, you know, the doubts always push us to research. I think really it's a mother, you know, and even monsters, you know, are a mother because we kind of run away from. So if we're running away from something, we're still running in a direction to go somewhere, you know, even if we don't know where it is. And this is all about research. And this the research, you know, it's always, we always try, you know, to not try, but, you know, we always heard research is, you know, it's like an academic thing, you know, because the research is for scientists and researchers. But research is more, you know, complicated with that. And when it gets to, you know, human feelings, human conditions, human sensitivity, we always need to do some research. And I mean by research, not just like, you know, tapping in the internet, you know, how we are, you know, what are the steps of angriness, kind of, you know, I'm not saying that. I mean by that, doing some research is, of course, it's like, you know, on books and the internet, but principally, you know, in our own life, looking, you know, of course, in, you know, in what we did experience, but mostly what other people around us experience as well. I feel strongly in the, you know, in the to write a novel, you know, the research part will be important, so important, but with the people around. And there is a huge amount of, I would say, that human knowledge about humanity, about, you know, sensitivity, like kind of sleeping around us. And we don't usually, I mean, you know, day by day, we don't see it because we're not looking for it. But when we start asking around us, friends, family, you know, a barber, whoever, you know, we meet in one day or, you know, in one life sometimes, we, you know, we found some amazing stuff. And I say amazing stuff because it just, as literature is, it's just a new way to feel and experience some reality of our world. And often we get really surprised. And one of my big surprises, you know, in those research, and sometimes research by accident, writing the weight of snow, was when I was looking into one of my father, you know, boxes. You know, I'm telling just the anecdote before I read the extract. You know, my father died many years ago, and one of my way, you know, to keep this relationship with my father, disappeared father, is to go through sometimes all his papers and stuff, you know, his notes, and because I have 2 card boxes, and sometimes I just open, and you know, for 10, 15, an hour, minutes, or an hour, I just read some stuff to fill me in, kind of. You know, this is my personal way to do it. It's not much important, but I was writing the weight of the snow, trying to make sense of a winter and a dramatic situation between two characters, and suddenly, looking in one of the boxes of my father, I found this poem that he wrote, probably when I was like 1 or 2 years old. And I say, oh, it's funny how research is also by accident, you know, and how accidents are really so important and so meaningful in a life and in an art project. Because he wrote probably like, you know, 30 few years before I was trying to do this project, a poem who kind of like resumed all the ambiency, all the ambience of my book, you know. So here it goes. Today, time turned the snow to metal, and the silence rejoiced. To form a perfect union, the white strokes rush groundwards. Mountains grab onto the bark of trees and on spiny arms. The greens disappear. The blues become opalescent. The edges of the browns and the russets fade, and at times a bird will draw a black line across this accelerate space. So you see, this is just a simple poem. This is just an ambience. This is just something, but it has in it exactly what I was trying to do, you know, in 300 pages, is the opposition between the immobility of winter and the movement of beings, you know, animal, human, you know, the black line of the birds is the black line, you know, of the life of my characters in the winter. And between the movement and the immobility, there is where we, you know, we look, and there it's where, you know, some tension can appear. So I put this poem, of course, the beginning of my book, not just because it's my father who wrote it, but because it made so much sense to me, and especially, I think, for the project. You know, that was really something important. And I was saying by that is how questioning, you know, can be answered sometimes just by accident. And even then, you know, how can that make sense, you know, sense when we are, you know, working on the project. And as I was saying a little bit earlier, you know, working with doubts, is always force ourselves as well to question, you know, what really is literature. You know, it's always maybe, I don't want to be, you know, too theoretical right now, but what is literature? What is literature for? What is, you know, and what it can do really to our lives, you know. And in another way, you know, as a reader or as a writer, you know, say, what am I doing? You know, as a reader, you say, oh, I'm being entertained, you know, by books. Say, well, you know, if a book is entertaining, you know, we will all say, it's good, but it's not enough. You know, let's say, you know, entertaining is good. We need to be, you know, outside. What's it's telling us, you know, entertainment is that we need to get out of our own life. But then can we ask ourselves why do we need to be outside of or, you know, our own life. Why was it? It's maybe it's not because, you know, we want to run away of it. I don't think so. It just maybe we try to enlarge it, you know, and literature, this is that, is the possibility to enlarge our way to see, to enlarge our small little life. You know, it's not a pejorative way to say it. I'm just saying, you know, life is short and small, you know. By reading, you know, it's a way to, you know, have like more eyes, to have more lives in the same time, to have, to enlarge, you know, our sensitivity to the world, to the place we're in right now. You know, it's something to go over our own life, you know, to and there is the purpose, I think, of literature. It's a way to, you know, make, you know, the experience of others, even through fiction. You know, fiction is just a trick. It's a tool, you know. So the our own experience of life as well, you know. So this is really a fundamental, you know, thing I think about fiction as, you know, this powerful and necessary detour to get back onto our own feet, you know. And all kind of fiction help us, you know, to do that. Well, you know, also that about that, but, you know, in my case, I'll say, you know, all those trick, you know, all the way I try, you know, to make sense of another life, and you know, a fictioned life, a fiction like story, fiction plot, you know, how I try to make that. It's just by, you know, a big attention to, you know, the real stuff. Because the real stuff, I mean by that, it's not exactly, you know, when we say, okay, we need the experience of others to enlarge our own life. It's beautiful, but what does it mean really, you know? Or how can that happen? It's not to say, oh, this other one is sad because of this and this and this and something really abstract. And it's kind of like, yeah, we don't know where to grab this, you know? I really feel and believe that details from the real life, you know, literature near the concrete world, the material world, you know, to be in a way really materialist, you know, in literature, that real stuff, you know, and stuff, you know, real words, simple stuff, table, chair, simple, you know, thing, as cold and snow, for example, in the book, but that's really where the great things are, you know. When we say friendship, of course it's beautiful and powerful, but it's so abstract. But when we say, maybe it's a clumsy example, but, you know, when we say, you know, for example, like for this weird handshake for this and that, already we are like getting nearer the reality. Maybe my example is not good enough right now, but when we say a detail that will materialize friendship, and at this point of their conversation, he puts a hand on his shoulder, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, just this, you know, we don't need to be taught about friendship like a general, just some gesture, some concrete stuff, and this and this. So, you know, to as a more or less good example, but some things, you know, that it's in my book and that I want to read to you today. Is just, of course, you know, I was talking about, you know, this relationship, this like weird friendship between my two characters, and more, you know, they go across the winter, the young man is getting better, and better he is, more independent he is, and more the old man, you know, is losing his kind of his tricks, his power on him. But still, you know, nothing is in a straight line in life. And this young man one day says, the old man is gone to the village. You know, I'll go out for the first time today. And I'll go to see what's happening in the village with the power outage by myself. And then I'll know the truth by myself. I don't need him to tell me what's happening and what da 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 da. So he goes. And obviously he got caught in a snowstorm, you know. It's a snow story. So he goes. I look up and try to situate myself in this empty landscape. Around me, everything is white. Around me, everything is black. To one side, I can make out the dark line of the forest. It is the only sign that I'm not moving through a desert. I begin to climb towards the house. The slope is steeper than I thought. My breathing is labored. My leg is numb from the effort. I'll make it. I'll make it. I'll make it. I know I will. I hang onto my poles for dear life. I move like a snowplow down a mountain road, keeping my eyes dead ahead so I won't be tempted by the precipice. Sweat runs down my skin and makes my clothes heavy. I must not stop. I must not stop. My body heat will disappear in a second if I would, and I will not be able to fend off the cold. I must be halfway there. The wind tears at my coat. I try to make out the shape of the house at the top of the hill, but it's too dark now, and the snow is blinding. I push forward, concentrating on the cold air rushing into my lungs, which each step my wounds could open. And then, as I shift my weight, thinking of the comforting immobility of my splints, my left leg gives way and I collapse. When I reach the house, I will get undressed and bundled up in a big wool blanket. A fire will be burning in the fireplace. Matthias will put the soup on. Maybe there will be black bread. I will eat then everything he sets down in front of me. And I'll fall asleep, watched over by the light and the heat of the flames. But when I open my eyes, I'm still lying on the ground. And it's snowing like crazy. I roll over, I struggle, I try to get up, but I only sink deeper. The cold is holding me down. Every movement weighs a ton, and I have no more strength. My leg has stopped sending me pain signals. I don't feel it anymore. I should have taken shelter with Jonas at the stable. I would have been comfortable in the straw between a donkey and an oak. I would have been warm. Ice is forming knots on my coat and hat and gloves. I must not stop. I must not stop. I must get up. I'm almost there. I steer into action, propping myself up on my elbows. I crawl. I twist. I drag myself along the snow. I make a little progress, though I feel that I am sinking, pulled down by icy underground currents. I move more and more slowly. My hands are completely frozen. Maybe now I should do like the old Matthias and pray. The blizzard howls. It's impatient, eager to cover me up, to embrace me and close over me. It salivates above me before it devours my body. I curl up to keep warm. I am like everybody else. I cannot accept the possibility of my death. Like everybody else, I deny it, and I pretend to be immortal. I try to stay calm, but my breathing is out of control. I can't stay here. I have to keep moving. The snow is a bed of cutting crystals. I have to stand up, but the cold won't let me. And I refuse to go this way, bam into myself, face to the ground. So I gather my courage and roll onto my back, my arms outstretched, palms open to the sky. This might be it. I look up to the darkness. All around me, shadows prowl. The night is hungry, and the snow carnivorous. This is it. Thank you. And then if you guys have some questions, we can make it more as a discussion and stuff, because if I keep talking, I will be maybe a little spinning around, but if not, it's okay too, but I'm here for you. Yeah. Both. I mean, it's a nationwide power outage. There is no electricity anywhere, no news from, you know, anywhere either. But the thing is, you know, the one moment we know that, you know, my characters, because the narrative is all, you know, all the novel takes place behind the, you know, the young guy eyes. So we don't know much than that, because there's not much to know. We just know that it's not coming back. Does it will? What cause? What you know? What's the cause of it? Or it's kind of like it just this. In fact, you know, I'm interested not by this. You know, there's some speculations. You know, sometime maybe it's this and blah blah blah, and people are, you know, trying to understand. But you know, until a certain point, there's no more to understand. It's just like there is all to, you know, to do though. So you know, we have to cut wood, organize of something. You know, it's more to make the thing about how, you know, a community, you know, gets to organize in a new way itself to keep going. You know, so because they don't want, you know, people to die, and they want, just want to, you know, keep going. Yes. You're welcome, but you're absolutely right. You know, it's all, of course, you know, it's all, I don't talk about that, you know, strictly in the novel, you know, how we are now, you know, dependent on electricity and water and the way we're organized, but it's just the way to, oh, well, okay, if it's not there anymore, and, you know, there's no, the society kind of fall down, and then what happened? I mean, we're still there, you know, it's societies, but we have to, you know, rethink or, let's say it like that, it might sound a little academic, but or normative way to be together. If there's no electricity anymore and there's no society, but there are still people, and people are still human. So it just, you know, it's kind of like an anticipation, you know, it's kind of, it's futurish, let's say, but it also goes in the past in our relations to each other through, you know, through works, through real things, through our relation to nature, to wood, to water, you know, to light. Okay, so how do we organize and say, okay, I'll help you to carry water today. Okay, we'll go, you know where the creek is, I'll go with you, you know. And then, you know, and then some things happen, because if not, you know, we just, you know, open the sink and na 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 na, and then, okay, we will go to, you know, to get water together, and then something will happen, and then this is for fiction. I mean, it's so fertile. Fertile, is that a word? Is that, yeah? You know, it's so rich, you know. So, so yeah. Thanks. Thank you for appointing that. Yes, it is, and this is a funny. It's a part as well in the story. I'm really glad that you say that, because, you know, I make this parallel. You know, the old man. You know, the opposition between my two characters. You know, the old man is old fashioned kind of, and he remembers. He said, you know, at times, you know, before. How, you know, how we come to those the people who lumber the wood, the lumberjacks, you know, a few hundreds years ago, and not that much, you know, how the lumberjacks, you know, were able to, you know, go through the winter together, like out north and na na without like kind of killing each other. It's because they were telling stories, you know. This, maybe they were not reading, but they were telling stories. You know, at this point, you know, it's where the narrative is important, because it makes sense, and it's kind of like what stories. It's what, you know, help us to stick together. You know, it's the social glue. You know, okay? So it's where it's important. So the old man always insists, you know, to tell stories, you know, to the young man that he was not talking much. You say, "Oh, I read that," and you know, there's a lot of parable of the Bible for that, because I'm playing with the references, and the references, of course, of the old guy. But so, and this is it. You know, stories are so important. And you know, we all try to say that, but you know, at a time where stories, in fact, you know, help us to, you know, even sometimes it's a lonely, you know, activity, even reading. But at the end, you know, it's up us, and I'm saying the same thing again, but to be together, you know, to open, you know, literature, stories, up us to open to each other. It's just basic as that, you know, and important as that, you know, it's both. Thanks to you all to be here and listening. Yeah, thanks to you all.